You're listening to Home in Progress, sponsored by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore. And today I've got a packed show, and we're covering a little bit of everything. Later on at the end, I'm going to be digging into how to choose the right paint colors for east-facing rooms. You know, these spaces can be a little bit tricky thanks to their shifting light, but with the right approach, they can really shine. We're going to get to that. Before we do, we're going to be looking at Benjamin Moore's ScuffX. It's a high-performance paint that's making a huge impact in schools, senior housing, and hotels throughout West Michigan. It's durable, it's washable, it resists scuffs, unlike anything I've ever seen. And in a lot of facilities, it's cutting down maintenance work in a big way. We're going to talk about that. I'm also going to be giving an update on some Ego battery-powered lawn equipment that I reviewed a few years back. You know, back then I was a huge fan, but the real test is how it holds up over time. So, what's the scoop? Am I still happy with it? I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But first, I want to start with something that happened to me in front of all my neighbors last week. It was classic me. So, I'm working on replacing a sprinkler head. All right, I dig it up, I unscrew the old one, I put the new one in place, and then I turn the sprinklers back on. Now, the new head is spinning around in a full circle, you know, and all I need to do to be done with this job is to dial it in, you know, so it's hitting the zone exactly the way I want, going a little bit this way to the right, hitting a stopping point, and then going back to the left, hitting the stopping point, and then just repeating that. That's all I need to do. So I go online, because I can never remember how to do this just from memory. I go online and look it up, and I see how it's supposed to be done. Very simple. So I do that, and of course it doesn't work. The sprinkler is still spinning in this slow circle, spraying the road, spraying everywhere. So I keep doing it, you know, adjusting it the way the manufacturer says to do, and no luck, no go. You know, it goes on and on and on like this, probably 30 minutes or so. You know, I'm getting really sick of it at this point. The kids are trying to help me, but wherever they stand, you know, I manually adjust the sprinkler quickly and then I almost hit them. It's not their fault. I know that. I know they're just trying to be helpful, but I needed them to not be there, right? So I could just work. There was nowhere that they could choose to go that I wasn't going to spray them. So I asked them, just please. Please just fade away into the background. You know, give me some space to work here. So they do that. They can tell I'm a little tense. And I go back to work on the sprinkler. I'm fidgeting with it. I'm adjusting it. I'm tweaking it. I'm checking the web. You know, and still I can't make it work. You know, 45 minutes in, I've probably been working on it. The kids are far away now on the yard, and they're giving me the space I need. They can tell the tension is running a little bit high. The neighbors, you know, across the street, they're all kind of watching me from their yards because they can see I'm really struggling. It's really interesting, you know, watching this little guy just not be able to pull this off. So anyway, all of that's going on. And in the midst of all of that, my absolute ridiculous black lab, Fern, I've talked about her on the show. She's sweet, but she's kind of a dope. She gets loose, you know, away from one of the kids, and she comes barreling at me. She didn't know where I was. All of a sudden, she spotted me. She comes busting at me. Now, I thought she was going to run on the road, and so I jumped up, I grabbed her leash, and then I bent over, you know, to look seriously and deeply into her eyes and convey the idea that she needed to sit down and behave. All right, so as I'm standing there, hunched over, my backside facing the road, you know, wiggling back and forth as I'm trying to convey to Fern that she needs to be obedient. You know, I'm doing all that 3 feet away from a sprinkler that I've completely forgotten about and which is still spinning slowly around. Well, you can see where this is going. Of course, it hit me directly in the bottom, full blast at, you know, at point blank range. It was a direct hit. Cold, cold water. Let me tell you, cold well water. A powerful jetting blast. You know, I don't know that I need to explain it much more clearly. It was an eye-opening experience, to say the least. I jumped higher than I thought I was capable of jumping at that point. And then I yelled, you know, nothing in particular, nothing bad, just a loud, startled yell that was really more like a high-pitched, you know, kind of like an eek. You know, and it wasn't an eek, but it was more that than it was a yell. It wasn't manly. Let's just say that. Fern's eyes went absolutely wide, and she took off towards the house. I don't think she knew what was going down at that point, but she was getting the heck out of Dodge when she saw me jump. The kids, they saw it happen, and they all took off across the yard in different directions, laughing as they went. I spun around, you know, trying to act cool, trying to salvage something of this moment, you know, like I maybe had planned this, that this is all part of my sprinkler plan. I'm going to just take one for the team, you know, direct hit right for the team, and somehow that's going to help me get the sprinkler fixed. You know, I don't know what I'm thinking, but I'm trying to look cool. What else can you do at that point? Well, I look at the neighbors, and they're all randomly looking everywhere but in my direction. You know, clearly they'd seen the whole thing. You know, they're probably still thinking about it. Do these things happen to anybody else out there? Please tell me they do, or am I completely alone in all of this? Anyway, I don't know. I thought that was a great home improvement story to start the show, and I was very excited to share that with you after I've recovered from the experience. I've been sitting on a donut pillow for about a week now, but finally, I'm able to be, you know, fluid like I used to be, you know, in movement. Anyway, I wanted to share that. Now let's get to the show. And I want to start by talking about Ego lawn equipment, battery-powered lawn equipment. And to help me do that, I've got Kevin Herman from Benjamin Moore, believe it or not, here in the studio with me. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Didn't necessarily want to have you here, Kevin, but no, I did.
Nobody else to talk to?
I know. I do get bored after a while. Uh-huh. I want to talk about, like, completely different things. I want to talk about paint stuff.
All right.
Scuffex in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to that, I want to talk about yard equipment. And, you know, because that's who we go to for expert advice is our...
The paint guy.
The paint guy, yeah. For no matter what we're talking about. No, the Ego battery-powered lawn equipment stuff, it's something that I bought and talked about on the show probably 4 years ago or so. I'm not exactly sure how long ago. I've had it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought an EGO, battery-powered weed whip. I have the hedge trimmer, and I have the leaf blower.
Okay.
And I got two battery packs that go with it. And when I bought it, I was not big on battery-powered anything. You know, I
have the fear too.
Yeah, I wanted it to work, and I've not had good experience with anything like that for that kind of equipment.
Yep.
And I did a lot of reading about it, a lot of reviews I read, and I jumped in, and I loved it. You know, I think my favorite part, and I mentioned it over and over again, was the hedge trimmer. I don't use that very often, but I had an electric one. And I went through so many power cords.
Yeah, I've cut them myself.
Yeah, just sliced right through them. And
a little shock sometimes.
Yeah, this made it so easy, you know, just get it and go. The leaf blower, I didn't have to drape cords over everything. Hmm. But I was always back of my mind thinking, you know, how long is this going to last?
Do they have enough power?
Yeah, well, I found out it had enough power.
Yep.
And how long is it going to last? And after the first year, I came on air and I talked about it. And, oh, yeah, man, it's still working good. Now it's got to be my fourth season, and they're still incredible. You know, I was doing the hedge trimmer thing this past 2 weekends ago, and it's still, I'm blown away. It's battery powered, and I'm cutting through things that have to be more than a quarter of an inch in diameter. You know, it's huge. I can't believe that
you're using it like a tree trimmer or something.
I should not be. I'm sure of that, but it is going through big stuff, and
I was definitely partial to the gas, but I don't like the change oil. I don't like the maintenance aspect, so I switched over to some electric stuff a few years ago. And I've been extremely happy with
now,
it, especially the Ego products.
Right. You switched over. I mean, one of the big things, because we had you on the air talking about it, and I think it's time to do a little follow-up and, you know, let people know how this has held up. You bought the Rider.
Yeah, it's the 42. Rider. I think they have a couple different sizes. They have the 42-inch riding lawnmower, which
battery-powered Rider.
Yeah, it has four batteries that it came with, 10 amp hours each, and then it has space for two more. So I could do 2 acres with that thing without a problem if I had all the batteries. I do a little over an acre, 1.2, 1.3 acres, something like that. And I was starting to get a little disappointed at the beginning of the year, this year. And
I've had bought it last year.
This is my third year, maybe fourth years. I've had it for a few years. The battery charge wasn't holding up like it used to, and it didn't go as fast, and it seemed to be pulling to one side. And I took a look at it, and all I had to do was put some air in the tires.
Now, I think this is really funny, and you are cutting yourself a little too much slack there, because you told me about this last week. Uh-huh. You weren't just a little
disappointed. I wasn't going to embellish on my stupidity.
I want to embellish on the stupidity.
Oh, Dan.
You were so bummed. You know, it's not working. It's not doing this. It's not doing that. And then you examined it a little more closely.
I actually paid
attention
to it.
You've been riding it all over the place, and you look at it, and you said, multiple tires are completely flat.
The left tire in the back was basically riding on the rim. I don't know why I didn't notice the leaning, but that probably why it didn't want to go straight. And then the front two tires, I didn't think they took air, but they have valve stems
on
them.
Turns out they do.
It turns out they do. And one of them was so flat that it has these weird looking bulges in the side now that I've filled it up.
So now you've damaged it.
It looks like it has growths, yeah,
okay.
Because it was running on flat for so long.
You had another thing that something, like a little bolt or something.
Oh, there's
you didn't tighten it.
We don't have to get into all this, but
when you
I
turn,
did.
It would plow a little furrow in your grass.
Yeah, one of the little, I guess, carriage wheels underneath the mower assembly. I broke it off and then I attached it, but the bolt was bent, so I didn't put it all the way back on. And it kind of dangled down a little bit, and every time I turned, it would plow the ground, either direction, left or right.
I think that's so funny. This thing is just junk, and it turns out you're just a terrible, terrible owner.
Well,
of
you know, I don't have to put gas in it or oil or anything, so I didn't think you had to do anything with it. No, it's maintenance-free.
It needs a little bit of love.
So now, guess what? I'm really happy with it again. It goes just as fast. It goes straight. I'm able to do the same amount of yard that I was able to before. Turns out that air in the tires is important.
I think it's hilarious because when you started to tell me this, I thought, oh, no, you don't like it anymore. Because we came out and we really advocated for
it. I didn't like the way it was.
It seemed like it was working well. And it turns out, no, it's a happy ending. You're just
I'm just an idiot.
I didn't want to say an idiot.
Okay.
I was thinking dope. But
I don't know if you can say that on the radio.
I think I can. I just did. So we'll wait for the letters to come.
So anyway, the bottom line is I'm very happy with it still.
So that's a rider. I know Eagle makes a battery-powered push mower. I was always going to try that. Haley has one of those. Haley used to be
I think Dave has one too.
Who does?
Dave Helmholt.
Okay, Dave, he's the general manager at RepColite. Yep. He's got one as well. Does he like that? Do you know?
I believe he loves it.
Okay. Yeah, I was watching a neighbor guy doing that the other day with his. I don't remember. I think his was an Ego as well. But there are other brands out there.
Yes.
But utterly silent.
Very quiet.
Really, really.
You just heard the whirring of the blade.
And that's what your rider is. Just truly, truly silent. And it flies.
It goes pretty fast. It goes fast enough now.
Yeah,
with air in the tires.
Air in the tires.
It goes much faster.
So still,
and straight.
All these years, still two thumbs up?
Yeah, I was really disappointed a few weeks ago. Now I'm back to being happy again.
No, I definitely love mine. I would definitely recommend digging into it. You know, if you've got gas-powered lawn equipment that you're using, electric stuff, or even if you've gone the cheapo battery route, you know, those things, you do have to pay to get something that's going to hold up.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to do a little maintenance.
Do a little bit of maintenance.
Minor.
Right?
Yeah.
Minor maintenance. But the thing that I love most about like the stuff that I've got, the leaf blower and the hedge trimmers, and honestly, the weed whip, because I had a gas-powered weed whip that I could never keep consistently, you know, easy
running
to start.
Right. Yeah.
That was a real pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two pieces that I had were both electric. I did have a gas-powered leaf blower, but that was the same thing. Could never... You know, I was never confident that when I'd go out and need it, it was going to be ready to go without
same thing I had.
Work with it. But with the electric ones, they were always ready to go. But now I've got to drape a cord everywhere I go. And that just got old after a while. And so what I would do is I just wouldn't do it as often. I would wait,
mm-hmm.
you know, save it up till I really needed it. With this battery powered stuff, I can go right away whenever it's ready to go all the time. As long as I've charged the batteries, I'm good to go.
Yep, the batteries have to be charged, but they don't take long.
No. Well, that's the other surprising thing. It
really, really
turns
quick.
Around pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'll put links in the show notes. If you're looking at or still debating the whole battery-powered lawn equipment thing, it's the real deal and definitely something to look into. All right, let's take a break, Kevin, and then when we come back, I want to talk about ScuffX and some interesting success that you're having with.
Okay, sure.
All right?
Sounds good.
We'll do that in just a minute. Stick around. Home in Progress is brought to you by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore. Top-tier paint, expert advice. Your next project is way easier than you think it's going to be. Well, I am still in the studio with Kevin Herman from
Benjamin Moore. Good morning
again. Kevin, thanks for waiting with me over the break. We just talked about lawn equipment, battery-powered lawn equipment. And now we're going to tap into the other thing that you're an absolute expert at. And
fishing? No, not
fishing. Someday we should talk about fishing because that's your true love, right? All right, that's the big hobby for Kevin. Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about fishing. Let's talk about ScuffX. Basically, you've been doing some really interesting problem solving lately. You know, you've been having conversations with a lot of different facilities around our area about some of their ongoing maintenance headaches. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't you walk us through just the types of places you've been working with and what kinds of paint challenges they've been dealing with?
Well, what I'm looking for is the maintenance facilities where they have some major challenges to keep the walls looking good. Any places where they have carts, gurneys, stretchers, wheelchairs,
things.
All those things. Or young children that are aggressive with their boots and stuff against the walls in schools.
Okay.
So looking at senior living facilities, schools, universities, hotels, anywhere where they just can't get paint to hold up.
So what are the things that they're running into? That they're just lots of touch-up?
Regular paints hold marks, right? If you, take your bottom of your shoe, if it's a black shoe and you kick the wall, it's going to leave a scuff mark. Same thing with the gurneys and the wheelchairs and all those things. They have black rubber on them, and they tend to make a lot of marks in the walls, and that's just standard. Mm-hmm. And regular paint just holds it, and it's hard to clean off. Well, we have a product called ScuffX, which is kind of remarkable in its ability to not even have those marks leave.
They don't even show up.
And if they do, it's easy to clean off.
So you start talking to these places, were these things that they were, they accepted? This is just how it is, and we've got
they have to paint a lot. In order to keep some of those areas looking good, they have to paint them multiple times a year, which is an expense. And then the products just don't hold up. So as soon as it's painted, it shortly starts to look just like it did. What I ask them for is those areas that are, they just can't find anything that works, and we give them some ScuffX, and they try it out, and typically they're very happy. It'll cut down the amount of times you have to paint enormously.
All right. So you start putting some ScuffX in their hands. Like, what was their first? I mean, are they skeptical that it's going to work out the way?
Everybody's skeptical. We've all been promised how things are going to work, and this is the next miracle product, and few of them live up.
So what's your pitch? Like when you go in there, you tell them it's a miracle product, it's going to do, what do you tell them?
Well, I tell them it is going to work extremely well, but I don't want them just to believe me, so I give them some product to try. And they test it out.
Giving out product.
Yeah, give them some gallons, because I know what's going to be the result. I know they're going to be, first of all, they're going to like the application. It's going to go on well. It's going to be very smooth. It's going to look like it's sprayed. It's a very nice product to apply. But
how is that different from other products, how they apply?
This just flows and levels, and it feels like an automotive finish. It's very smooth.
So brush and rolling?
Brush and rolling, it gives you a phenomenal finish, even brushing and rolling. But the big difference is it doesn't have to cure to be durable. It has its durability as soon as it's dried.
Okay, so other products, not everybody.
They have to cure.
Okay, talk about that. How long does curing
take? Latex products typically take up to a month to fully cure. Usually within a week, they're most of the way. 2 weeks, they're pretty much cured. But that's all time that it's susceptible to abuse, abrasion.
And even when it is cured, most other products.
Yeah, it's never going to be what ScuffX is even after the first hour of dry time.
And that's our products too, right?
Mm-hmm. Everything.
And more products.
Everything.
It's not just, this product and everybody else's.
ScuffX is unique.
It's very unique in that regard.
Mm-hmm. So it's just
right
a maintenance
away,
coating.
It's
for facilities where you have a lot of abuse in the walls. This is what you want.
All right. So you put it in their hands. They start working with it.
Mm-hmm.
What is the feedback that you get back?
They like the application. Typically, they're wowed by that. And then with a little bit of time to live with it, and see how it holds up and how they don't have the mark showing up like they did before, or if they do get one, how easy. I mean, I have people take it. They put their finger in their mouth, and they use a little saliva to clean the mark off the wall.
I've seen people lick that mark right off the wall. Just like five or six
We don't
six
recommend
licks
that. Nah,
like
yeah,
a cat.
Let's use a cloth with some Dawn or something.
Well, I'm not saying that was the best way to go. I'm just saying it stuck in my mind.
All right. That's weird.
So you're seeing that kind of success.
Yeah.
And I know that you mentioned in other conversations that we had that a couple of these places are rolling it out to, you know, you brought it to one particular facility, but they've got other buildings, other areas, and they're...
The word gets out quickly. It's a phenomenal product.
So what makes it do what it's doing? You know, do you have...
I don't know, technically. They don't tell us. It's a bunch of proprietary stuff.
Yeah.
It feels extremely smooth, like there's very little friction on it, and that's why it doesn't grab those marks.
Now we've
kind of ride right over top.
We've done, you know, displays in our stores. We've done displays at events, you know, where we painted half of a wall with something that, you know, is somebody else's.
Or one of our other products.
Right. Yeah. But it's something that's supposed to be as good, you know, resist all of the scuffs, and half of it is that, and then the same color will make the other half be Scuff X. And we'll take a tool that will mark that up, and it literally looks like a stage show, like some kind of act,
because it does
you
look
can
fake.
Rub that over the wall, and one half, the non-Scuff X half, is all dark, all marks, and it instantly stops when you hit the Scuff
X. It's pretty cool. One of the best demonstrations I saw was when you guys did that designer show, and you had that Cheshire cat. So the piece of drywall you had looked like just a blank white piece of drywall. But you'd use two different products, one from our competitor and then Scuff X. And the Scuff X is where you wanted everything to stay white,
right?
Like the eyes and the teeth.
Yeah.
And everything just appeared as you started abusing the surface. It was
really
kind of cool.
It was so smart. I think that was Haley's idea. It was an Alice in Wonderland kind of loosely themed event.
Yeah.
And it was really cool how that cat came out.
As people started abusing the drywall with the markers.
Yeah. And I put Scuff X in an entryway at my home. And it was previously a place where we had just shoe marks. You know, the kids would come in and kick their shoes off. Like
a boot area is a fantastic area for this at home.
And I haven't had to do anything to that. It's been painted that way for probably 5 years. And touched it. Looks great. So where else, you know, we're talking about facilities.
Yeah.
You know, help people kind of find a place in their own space to use this. I mean, if you're a facility manager or, you know.
Then it's a no-brainer. Yeah, any area that you can't keep clean or looking good, that's where you want to use Scuff X. At home, though, the boot room or whatever you refer to that as is a great place. A hallway, a kid's playroom, anywhere where an extraordinary amount of abuse is going to happen to the walls, that's where you want to use Scuff X.
Definitely did it in some hallways. I did it in a kid's room. And been thrilled with the results on that. A couple of downsides to it, now that I think about it, and I don't know that they were downsides, but my kid was a little bummed. She was going to hang. She had all these little sticky things.
Yeah.
And we looked at which ones are supposed to cleanly remove and stuff, but she wanted to hang a lot of art on the wall.
Uh-huh.
And it won't stick longevity on the Scuff X. It just won't. It releases over time. So she's gone another direction. And so I say that's a downside. But to me, I think the alternative...
It kind of shows the durability. Yeah.
The alternative is far worse. I don't want to be scraping these things off and not be able to get them to remove. It comes in what finishes?
A mat, which is a shiny mat, an eggshell, a
satin.
What do
you mean it's a shiny mat?
Most mats come between, you know, I would say probably 4 and 5% in the sheen. This is going to be more like 8 to 10, be my guess.
So a little bit shinier for a mat, but still.
Oh, the durability is off the chart.
So we've got a mat, we've got a...
An eggshell.
Eggshell.
A satin sheen, and a semi-gloss.
Semi-gloss. Yeah. One other thing, just since we're talking about the sheens, one of the interesting things you brought up when we were talking about this off air is you had a facility that had another product. That one was a competitor's product. It was in a semi-gloss, and it wasn't holding up as well. And they were able to not just put Scuff X on and get rid of the scuffs and all of that. They also were able to go to a matte finish, which hid so many more imperfections.
Yeah, the picture that that the maintenance guy showed me. It was from another facility other than his, one of his coworkers. They were using a semi-gloss from a competitor, and not a problem other than it. Semi-gloss is very shiny. It's going to pick up every imperfection, and the walls were older, and they'd been damaged and repaired and damaged and repaired. You know, figure this is a senior housing facility. That they just looked terrible with that semi-gloss. You could see everything. So they needed to get to a lower sheen, but they needed something durable. Well, here you go. That mat in the ScuffX is probably going to be more scuff-resistant than that semi-gloss from the competitor. Probably, it is.
And you got the much nicer look.
Yeah, and it looks more uniform afterwards.
Yeah, so that's really cool. What about price? How are you shaking out? You don't have to throw numbers out because it varies by people. But
yeah,
are you able to get them in at a good price?
Yes. For the most part, what I see from the competition, we're able to get them a much better product for a very similar price.
So it's not like you're paying huge amounts.
No, generally when I tell them how much ScuffX is going to be, they're somewhat surprised because they think it's going to be a whole lot more.
Yeah, it's really is. One of those things that, you know, like you said at the beginning, we've all been disappointed with promises.
it's typical sales pitch, right?
Right. Yeah. It always is. And you feel bummed out about that. But it's happened to me. This is one that when you guys first came out and told us what it would do, I was already, you know, once bitten, twice shy kind of a thing.
Of course.
I'm not going to go nuts on this till I sample it and see it. And what we saw was so ridiculously cool.
It's very dramatic.
It's like a parlor trick, you know, when you whip out samples and show people. They, generally speaking, think that it's all kind of, if they haven't heard about it or seen it,
right,
they think it's a joke. Not real until you show it to them. And my experience is they go from kind of looking around and not really focusing on it to being like laser focused on what is the trick here and how. Then they'll get the tool out of your hand and they're trying to make those marks on the ScuffX.
Right. So the demo is really key because everybody has heard, well, most of us have heard over promises on products that we're about to buy. And so when I bring out the demo board and I show them and then they can use the tool themselves and see just how much more durable it is. It's from there. It's very easy.
It applies beautifully. It's a single component product. You don't mix parts with it.
It's not just that expensive.
Paint. Yeah. Right. Prices out well. You've got all the finishes, all the Benjamin Moore colors.
3,500 colors in each one of the finishes and custom matching.
It's definitely something to ask about next paint project. Whether you've got a facility, or maybe your facility is just your, you know, that mud room that gets a lot of use, definitely check into ScuffX. We've got it at all the Repcolite stores. Stop out, ask us about it, and yeah, just start the conversation.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Kevin, thanks for being here.
Appreciate it, Dan. Take care.
All right, we've been working our way through different exposures, rooms with different exposures. We've covered north-facing rooms, south-facing rooms, and the colors you would pick for those spaces so you can have the most success. Now let's turn our attention to east-facing rooms, and we're going to do that right after this. This is Home in Progress, where the to-do list is long, and that's all right. We're not crabbing at you. We're not going to yell at you. That's how it is. It's how ours is, too. It's proudly supported by Repcolite Paints and Benjamin Moore, because home projects are easier when you've got people you can trust. And we're back. You're listening to Home in Progress, sponsored by Repcolite Paints and Benjamin Moore. And right now, let's talk about something that's sometimes trickier than it seems, choosing colors for an east-facing room. And fair warning, they can be a bit of a challenge. Unlike north or south-facing rooms, which have fairly consistent lighting throughout the day, east-facing rooms kind of can have, you know, kind of like a split personality thing going on. And here's what I mean. If your windows face east, you're getting morning sun. You know, right away, early morning sun comes in, clean, fresh, you know, it's slightly warm light, you know, with a soft yellow glow. It's not the golden, you know, really, really powerful light that you get from west-facing rooms in the afternoon, but it's warm enough to bring to life soft whites, pastels, things like that. And that quality of light really makes the room feel open. It can make it feel uplifting. It can infuse it with energy, especially in the early part of the day. So that's early morning. But by mid-morning to noon, things start to shift a little bit. That subtle warmth kind of fades out and the light becomes a little bright. It becomes a little more neutral. It becomes almost stark. And at this point, many lighter colors begin to wash out. A warm cream that felt cozy, for example, at 7 in the morning might look nearly white or even flat you know, just flat in nature by lunchtime. It's just washed out. Then in the afternoon, everything changes again. As the sun moves to the opposite side of the house, the room gets dimmer and the light cools a little bit. You know, the quality of the light cools a little bit. And by early evening, that light begins to take on a gray-blue cast. And that's when even a cheerful color can suddenly feel cold or muddy or something like that. You know, I've run into this exact problem or scenario. It turned out to be a bit of a problem. Ran into it myself. I had this buttery yellow that we had put in a west-facing space, and it was absolutely perfect for that space. It was exactly what we wanted. It was rich. It was sunny. You know, it was just so inviting, so perfect. And I had leftover paint from that project, and I decided I'm going to sample it on the walls in this east-facing living room. And at that point, I wasn't thinking about the living room as being east-facing. I wasn't thinking about that bedroom that had the same color in it as being west-facing. It was just the bedroom and the living room. You know, I wasn't thinking about the exposure. So I put it in there, and I did that early in the morning because that's how I roll. Get up early, start working, and then I crash and zonk by the afternoon. But anyway, in the early morning when I put it on, it looked perfect. I thought I was brilliant. But then later, by evening, when I was waking from my nap, I realized that that color looked weirdly green, and it really felt off. It did not look good. Same paint, totally different feel from morning to evening. And that's a perfect example of how much natural light really does shape the colors that we live with. So all of that can be going on in an east-facing space. So with that happening, how in the world do you choose a color that's not going to mess with you throughout the day? Well, the first thing you got to do is think about when you use the room the most. If it's a morning space, you spend most of your morning time in that room. Maybe it's a breakfast nook or a bedroom. If that's the case, lean into the warmth of that sunrise light that you're getting. So creamy whites, soft yellows, warm neutrals, they're all going to glow and feel, you know, warm and cozy and all of that without feeling overpowering. Even cooler tones like a pale green or a blue-green can feel balanced and fresh in that early light. Now, if you're typically in the room later in the day when the light has begun to cool off, you're going to need something with, you know, some more saturation, more color to keep it from washing out or from, you know, going dull. And this is especially true for neutrals. You know, cool grays, greiges, taupes with too much gray and not enough undertone, all of them can end up looking lifeless in the afternoon. So if that's when you're largely spending time in this space, you're going to want to adjust for that. So if you are looking for a neutral, make sure that it's got a little bit of color underneath, you know, color undertones to keep it interesting through that midday, you know, part of the day when that light really is intense and white and clean. Now, if you use the room throughout the day, what if that's the case? You know, you're kind of there morning, you're there in the afternoon, you're there throughout the day. Well, then pick the color that you like best during the time that you're in the room the most, right? That's the best you can do. You've got to make peace with the fact that it may shift a little bit later or earlier in the day. As long as it's not wildly off-putting in the other half of the day, you should be fine. You know, you don't need perfection around the clock. We're not going to always get that, you know, when we're working with natural lighting. We're not going to get perfection around the clock. You just need something that stays within your comfort zone through the whole day. Now, one more thing that makes a huge difference, of course, is artificial lighting. In the afternoon when the natural light fades and the room goes cool, your artificial lighting needs to step in and kind of do some heavy lifting for you. And that doesn't mean just flipping on a lamp and filling the room with light. It means choosing the right kind of light bulb to use in your space. A warm white light bulb in the 2700 to 3000 Kelvin range is usually your best bet. You know, daylight corrected bulbs might sound like a brilliant, great idea. Well, the thing is, they tend to mimic noon sun, which, like we talked about earlier, it can be harsh and it can be stark, and especially in a space that's already starting to lean cool. So warm it up a little bit. That's usually going to help you. It can change the entire mood of that space. All right. With all that said, let's talk about paint colors a little bit. And remember, everything I list is going to be in the show notes later. So definitely look there and check it out. And also check out our blog. I'll have another post about east-facing rooms so you can get all these colors in that regard. It's going to be easier than listening to them and trying to remember them. If you're looking for a fresh, airy look, if that's what you're after, then warm whites are a solid choice. So Benjamin Moore's White Dove, that's classic. You know, it's creamy, it's a soft white with just enough warmth to stay inviting all day. Simply White, another Benjamin Moore color. It's got a subtle yellow undertone that's going to keep it cheerful. If you want something deeper and richer than those, Navajo White is going to give you some depth without getting muddy. Now, grays, let's say you're looking for a gray. They're popular, but in east-facing rooms, cool grays can get icy, you know, really fast. So go warmer if you're going gray. Classic gray, OC23, that's soft and warm. Almost an off-white in bright light. Balboa Mist, it's got a little bit of a hint of pink that kind of keeps it elegant without clashing with the changing light. Revere Pewter, you know, we see that color used all the time. That's going to give you a warm, grounded grayish that adds depth without a lot of heaviness. Now, if you're looking for a dependable neutral, Bleaker Beige, it's got soft yellow undertones that will work in the morning, and it's going to hold up later. Wind's Breath, it's lighter with a sandy warmth. Now, if you really are leaning towards wanting to have some color in the space, well, go for it, because eastern-facing light works really well with pale greens, muted corals, blue-greens. Just steer clear of strong blues and strong purples, because they tend to feel a little bit cold or stark by late afternoon. Now, one last thing with all of this, and I know I threw a bazillion colors at you. The bigger idea is just remember, if you're dealing with an east-facing room, head to the website, repcolite.com, find the blog post, or go back and catch this episode again, Home in Progress, wherever you get your podcasts. Then you can go through it a little more slowly. But one last thing, don't forget about your trim and your ceilings. A clean white like Chantilly lace that's going to reflect the light. It's going to lift the whole room, especially in the afternoon. So that's something to think about for those spaces. Bottom line, east-facing rooms shift dramatically throughout the day. That's the big takeaway. And because of that, there's no one-size-fits-all solution. But if you think about timing, you know, when you're in the room most often, and you make sure you test your samples in different lighting and pay attention to undertones, you can absolutely find a color that works. If you need help finding a place to start, stop out at any RepcoLite location, and we'll help you narrow down your options and help you find something that makes your space look great from early morning till you go to bed at night. And that's going to do it for this episode of Home in Progress, brought to you by RepcoLite Paints and Benjamin Moore. Thanks for joining us today. We covered a lot, from the surprising power of SCUFX in cutting down maintenance in high traffic facilities to a good, honest conversation about how we still feel about our Ego battery-powered lawn equipment. It's definitely worth it. Go check it out for yourself. And we also jumped into, you know, a deep dive about how to deal with east-facing light and how it can make or break your paint color choices. Hopefully, you're walking away with a few new ideas and maybe a little bit of inspiration for your next project. Now, if you did enjoy the show, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss another episode. And if you've got a second, we'd really love it if you'd leave us a review. It helps other listeners find the show and it helps keep us improving. All right, you can catch past episodes, bonus content, and more at repcolite.com, so check that out. And if you've got a question, a topic you'd like us to cover, or a project that you're struggling with, we'd love to hear from you. Just head to the website and reach out. And I should mention this, if you have a facility that you're responsible for, you know, a doctor's office, a school, a hotel, a senior living center, and you're thinking that you might benefit from using Benjamin Moore SCUFX like we talked about last segment, please reach out to me and I'll connect you with the right people. We might even be able to get some free samples in your hands so you can try it and see what it does for your space. So if you're interested, email me at info@repcolite.com and include SCUFX in the subject of that email. That's info@repcolite.com, and I'll reach out to you and get the conversation started. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll see you next week. I'm Dan Hansen. Thanks for listening.